Side 5. The Gods Themselves. Continuing on page 172. A waitress had reached their table and had placed the dishes before them with quick, smooth motions. The Earthman was visibly impressed. He said to the waitress, "You make them seem to float down." The waitress smiled and moved on. Selene said, "Don't you try to do the same. She's used to the gravity and can handle it." "And if I try, I'll drop everything, is that it?" "You'll make a gorgeous mess," she said. "Well, I won't try. There's a good chance someone will before long, and the plate will flow down to the floor, and they'll grab for it and miss, and 10 to 1 knock themselves out of their chair. I'd warn them, but it never helps, and they're just all the more embarrassed. Everyone else will laugh, the tourists, that is, because the rest of us have seen it too often to find it funny, and because it's just a clean-up job." The Earthman was lifting his fork carefully. "I see what you mean. Even the simplest motions seem queer." "Actually, you'll get used to it quickly enough, at least to little things like eating. Walking is harder. I never saw an Earthman run efficiently out here, not really efficiently." For a while they ate in silence. Then he said, "What does the L stand for?" He was looking at her nameplate again. It said Selene Lindstrom L. "It just means Luna," she said rather indifferently, "to distinguish me from the immigrants. I was born here." "Really? That's nothing to be surprised about. We've had a working society here for over half a century. Don't you think babies are born here? We have people here who were born here and are grandparents." "How old are you?" 32, she said. He looked startled, then mumbled, "Of course." Selene raised her eyebrows. "You mean you understand? Most Earthmen have to have it explained." The Earthman said, "I know enough to know that most of the visible signs of aging are the result of the inexorable victory of gravity over tissue, the sagging of cheek and the drooping of breast. With the moon's gravity 1/6 that of Earth, it isn't really hard to understand that people will stay young-looking." Selene said, "Only young-looking. It doesn't mean we have immortality here. The lifespan is about that of Earth, but most of us are more comfortable in old age." "That's not to be dismissed." "Of course, there are penalties, I suppose." He had just taken his first sip of his coffee. "You have to drink this." He paused for a word, and must have discarded it, for he used none. "We could import food and beverages from Earth," she said, amused, "but only enough to feed a fraction of us a fraction of the time. There'd be no point to that, when we can use the space for more vital items. Besides, we're used to this crud." "Or were you going to use a still stronger word?" "Not for the coffee," he said. "I was going to save that for the food, but crud will do. Tell me, Miss Lindstrom, I didn't see any mention on the tour itinerary of the proton synchrotron."
"The proton synchrotron?"
She was finishing her coffee, and her eyes were beginning to slide round the room, as though estimating the moment for getting them all to their feet again. "That's terrestrial property, and it's not open to tourists."
"You mean that it's off-limits to lunarites?"
"Oh, no, nothing of the sort. Most of its staff are lunarites. It's just that it's the terrestrial government that sets the rules. No tourists."
"I'd love to see it," he said.
She said, "I'm sure you would. You've brought me luck. Not one item of food, not one blessed man or woman has hit the floor." She got to her feet and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be leaving in about 10 minutes. Please leave the plates where they are. There are restrooms for those who wish to use them, and then we will visit the food processing plants, where meals such as you have just eaten are made possible."
2.
Selene's quarters were small, of course, and compact, but they were intricate. The windows were panoramic, star scenes that changed slowly and very randomly, never having any relationship to any real constellation.
Each of the three windows could be made to undergo telescopic magnification when Selene so desired. Baron Neville hated that part of it. He would tend to turn it off rather savagely and say, "How can you stand it? You're the only one I know who has the bad taste to do such a thing. It's not as though these nebulae and star clusters exist, even." And Selene would shrug coolly and say, "What's existence? How do you know the ones out there exist? Besides, it gives me a sensation of freedom and motion. May I have that in my own quarters if I choose?" Then Neville would mumble something and make a half-hearted attempt to restore the controls to where he had found them, and Selene would say, "Let it go." The furniture was in smooth curves, and the walls were abstractly decorated in low-key, unobtrusive colors. Nowhere was there any representation of anything that might be considered a living thing. "Living things are Earth," Selene would say, "not the moon." Now, when she entered, she found, as so often, Neville there, Baron Neville, resting on the flimsy couch with one sandal on. The other lay beside him where it had dropped, and there was a line of red marks on his abdomen just over his umbilicus, where he had been meditatively scratching. She said, "Get us some coffee, won't you, Baron?" and slipped out of her own clothes in a long, graceful wiggle, accompanied by a sigh of relief, letting them drop to the ground and then kicking them into the corner with one toe. "What a relief to get out of them," she said. "It's the worst part of the job, having to dress like an earthy." Neville was in the kitchen corner. He paid no attention. He had heard it before. He said, "What's wrong with your water supply? It's way down."
"Is it?" she asked.
"Well, I've been overusing, I suppose. Just be patient." "Any trouble today?" Selene shrugged. "No, very run-of-the-mill. Just the usual bit about watching them teetering along and pretending they don't hate the food, and knowing they're wondering if they'll be asked to take off their clothes. I shouldn't be surprised. Disgusting possibility." "Are you taking up prudery?" He brought the two small cups of coffee to the table. "In this case, prudery is required. They're wrinkled, sagging, paunchy, and full of germs. I don't care what the quarantine regulations are like. They're full of germs. What's new on your side?" Baron shook his head. He was heavily built for a Lunarite, and there was an almost sullen narrowing of his eyes that had become a built-in feature. Except for that, his features were even and remarkably handsome, Selene thought. He said, "Nothing startling. We're still waiting out the change in commissioner. We'll have to see what this Gottstein is like." "Can he make difficulties?" "None more than are being made. After all, what can they do? They can't infiltrate. You can't disguise an earthy as a Lunarite." But he looked uneasy just the same. Selene sipped at her coffee and looked at him shrewdly. "Some Lunarites might be earthies inside." "Yes, and I'd like to know which. Sometimes I don't think I can trust..." "Oh, well, I'm wasting incredible amounts of time with my synchrotron project and getting nowhere. I'm having no luck with priorities." "They probably don't trust you, and I don't blame them. If only you didn't slink around so conspiratorially." "I do no such thing. It would give me great pleasure to walk out of the synchrotron room and never return. But then they would become suspicious." "If you've been raising hell with your water supply, Selene, I suppose we can't have a second cup."
"No, we can't.
But if it comes to that, you've been helping me waste water. You've had two showers here in the last week." "I'll give you a water credit. I didn't know you were counting." "I'm not counting. My water level is." She finished her own cup of coffee and stared at its emptiness thoughtfully. She said, "They always make faces over it, the tourists do, and I can never figure out why, either. It tastes fine to me. Did you ever taste Earth coffee, Baron?"
"No," he said briefly.
"I did, once. Some tourist had smuggled in packets of what he called instant coffee. He offered me some in exchange for you-know-what. Seemed to think it was an even trade." And you had some?
I was curious. It was bitter and metallic. I hated it.
Then I told him that miscegenation was against Lunarite custom, and he turned rather bitter and metallic himself.
You never told me this. He didn't try anything, did he?
It's not particularly your business, is it? And no, he didn't try anything. If he had tried, at the wrong gravity for him, I'd have bounced him from here to Corridor 1.
Then she went on. Oh, yes, I picked up another Earthy today, insisted on sitting with me.
And what did he offer you in exchange for the screwing you so delicately called you-know-what?
Just sat there.
And stared at your breasts?
They're there to be stared at, but actually he didn't. He stared at my nameplate. Besides, what's it to you what he fantasied? Fantasies are free, and I don't have to fulfill them.
What do you think I'm fantasying? Bed with an Earthman?
With all the action you would expect of someone trying to handle a gravitational field he isn't used to?
I wouldn't say it hasn't been done, but not by me, and not that I've ever heard any good of it.
Is that settled? Can I get back to the Earthy, who's nearly 50, and who obviously wasn't terrifically handsome even when he was 20?
Interesting appearance, though. I'll grant him that.
All right. I can do without a thumbnail sketch.
What about him?
He asked about the proton synchrotron. Neville rose to his feet, swaying a little, as was almost inevitable after quick movement at low gravity.
What did he ask about the synchrotron?
Nothing. Why are you so excited? You asked me to tell you anything that was out of the way with any tourist at any time, and this seemed out of the way. No one ever asked me about the synchrotron before.
All right.
He paused a little, then, in a normal voice, said, Why was he interested in the synchrotron?
Selene said, I haven't the faintest idea. He just asked if he could see it.
It could be that he's a tourist with an interest in science.
For all I know, it was just a ploy to get me interested in him.
And I suppose you are. What's his name?
I don't know. I didn't ask him.
Why not?
Because I'm not interested in him. Which way do you want it to be?
Besides, his asking shows he's a tourist. If he were a physicist, he wouldn't have to ask. He'd be there.
My dearest Selene, said Neville, let me spell it out. Under the present circumstances, anyone who asks to see the proton synchrotron is a peculiar fellow we want to know about.
And why should he ask you?
He walked hastily to the other end of the room and back, as though wearing off a little energy. Then he said, You're the expert at that nonsense. Do you find him of interest?
Sexually?
You know what I mean. Don't play games, Selene.
Selene said with clear reluctance, He's interesting, even disturbing, but I don't know why.
He said nothing, he did nothing.
Interesting and disturbing, is he? Then you will see him again.
And do what?
How do I know? That's your bit. Find out his name. Find out anything else you can. You've got some brains, so use them on a little practical nosiness for a change.
Oh, well, she said, orders from on high. All right.
3. There was no way of telling the commissioner's quarters by size alone from those of any Lunarite. There was no space on the moon, not even for terrestrial officials. No luxurious waste, even as a symbol of the home planet. Nor, for that matter, was there any way of changing the overwhelming fact about the moon, that it was underground at low gravity, even for the greatest Earthman who ever lived.
Man is still the creature of his environment, sighed Luis Montes. I've been 2 years on the moon, and there have been times when I have been tempted to stay on, but I'm getting on in years. I've just passed my 40th, and if I intend ever to go back to Earth, it had better be now. Any older, and I won't be able to readjust to full gravity.
Conrad Gottstein was only 34 and looked, if anything, younger. He had a wide, round, large-featured face, the kind of face one didn't see among the Lunarites,
the kind of face that was something they would draw as part of an earthy caricature. He was not heavily built. It did not pay to send heavily built earthmen to the moon, and his head seemed too large for his body. He said, and he spoke planetary standard with a perceptibly different accent from that of Montez, "You sound apologetic."
I am,
said Montez. Where Gottstein's face was intrinsically good-natured in appearance, the long, thin lines of Montez's face were almost comically tragic. I am apologetic in both senses. I am embarrassed to be leaving the moon, since it is an attractive world filled with excitement. And I am embarrassed about the embarrassment, ashamed that I should be reluctant to take up Earth's burden, gravity and all. Yes, I imagine taking back the other 5/6 will be hard, said Gottstein. I've been on the moon only a few days, and already I feel that 1/6 G is perfectly fine. You won't feel that when the constipation starts and you start living on mineral oil, said Montez with a sigh. But that will pass. And don't think you can imitate a light gazelle just because you feel light. There's an art to it.
So I understand.
So you think you understand, Gottstein. You haven't seen the kangaroo walk, have you?
On television.
That doesn't really give you the feel of it. You have to try it. It's the proper mode for crossing level lunar surface at high speed. The feet move together backward and launch you on what would be a simple broad jump on Earth. While you're in midair, they come forward, begin moving back just before they hit the ground again, keep you launched, and so on. The motion seems slow by Earth standards, with only a low gravity whipping you on, but each leap is in excess of 20 feet, and the amount of muscular effort required to keep you in the air, if there were air, is minimal. The sensation is like flying.
Have you tried it? Can you do it?
I've tried it, but no Earthman can really do it. I've kept it up for as many as 5 leaps in a row, enough to get the sensation. Just enough to want to do more. But then there is the inevitable miscalculation, a loss of synchronization, and you tumble and slide for a quarter of a mile. The Lunarites are polite and never laugh at you. Of course, it's easy for them. They start as children and pick it up at once without trouble.
It's their world, said Gottstein, chuckling. Think how they'd be on Earth.
They wouldn't be on Earth. They can't. I suppose that's an advantage on our side. We can be either on Moon or on Earth. They can live only on the Moon. We tend to forget that because we confuse the Lunarites with Immies.
With what?
That's what they call the Earth immigrants, those who live on the Moon more or less permanently, but were born and raised on the Earth. The immigrants can, of course, return to the Earth, but the real Lunarites have neither the bones nor the muscles to withstand the Earth's gravity. There were some tragedies in that respect in the Moon's early history.
Oh?
Oh, yes. People who returned with their Moon-born children. We tend to forget. We've had our own crisis, and a few dying children don't seem important in the light of the huge casualties of the late 20th and all that followed. Here on the Moon, though, every dead Lunarite who succumbed to the gravity of Earth is remembered. It helps them feel a world apart, I think. Gottstein said, I thought I had been thoroughly briefed on Earth, but it seems I will still have a lot to learn. Impossible to learn everything about the Moon from a post on Earth. So I have left you a full report, as my predecessor did for me. You'll find the Moon fascinating and, in some ways, excruciating. I doubt that you've eaten lunar rations on Earth, and if you're going by description only, you will not be prepared for the reality. But you'll have to learn to like it. It's bad policy to ship Earth items here. We've got to eat and drink the local products. You've been doing it for 2 years, and I guess I'll survive. I've not been doing it steadily. There are periodic furloughs to Earth. Those are obligatory whether you want them or not. They've told you that, I'm sure.
Yes, said Gottstein.
Despite any exercises you do here, you will have to subject yourself to full gravity now and then just to remind your bones and muscles what it's like. And when you're on Earth, you'll eat. and occasionally some food is smuggled in.
Gottstein said, "My luggage was carefully inspected, of course, but it turned out there was a can of corned beef in my coat pocket. I had overlooked it. So did they."
Montez smiled slowly and said hesitantly, "I suspect you are now going to offer to share it?"
"No," said Gottstein judiciously, wrinkling his large button nose. "I was going to say with all the tragic nobility I could muster, 'Here, Montez, have it all. Thy need is greater than mine.'" He stumbled a bit in trying to say this, since he rarely used second-person singular in Planetary Standard. Montez smiled more broadly, and then let it vanish. He shook his head. "No, in a week I'll have all the Earth food I can eat. You won't. Your mouthfuls will be few in the next few years, and you will spend too much time regretting your present generosity. You keep it all, I insist. I would but be earning your hatred ex post facto." He seemed serious, his hand on the other's shoulder, his eyes looking straight into Gottstein's. "Besides," he said, "there is something I want to talk to you about that I've been putting off, because I don't know how to approach it, and this food would be an excuse for further sidetracking." Gottstein put away the earth can at once. There was no way in which his face could match the other's seriousness, but his voice was grave and steady. "Is there something you could not put into your dispatches, Montez?"
"There was something I tried to put in, Gottstein, but between my not knowing how to phrase it and Earth's reluctance to grasp my meaning, we ended up not communicating. You may do better. I hope you do. One of the reasons I have not asked to have my tour of duty extended is that I can no longer take the responsibility of my failure to communicate."
"You make it sound serious."
"I wish I could make it sound serious. Frankly, it sounds silly. There are only some 10,000 people in the lunar colony. Rather less than half are native lunarites. They're hampered by an insufficiency of resources, an insufficiency of space, a harsh world, and yet, said Gottstein encouragingly, "there is something going on here, I don't know exactly what, which may be dangerous."
"How can it be dangerous? What can they do? Make war against the Earth?"
Gottstein's face trembled on the brink of a smile crease.
No, it's more subtle than that." Montez passed his hand over his face, rubbing his eyes petulantly. "Let me be frank with you. Earth has lost its nerve."
"What does that mean?"
"Well, what would you call it? Just about the time the lunar colony was being established, Earth went through the Great Crisis. I don't have to tell you about that."
"No, you don't," said Gottstein with distaste.
"The population is 2 billion now from its 6 billion peak."
"Earth is much better for that, isn't it?"
"Oh, undoubtedly, though I wish there had been a better way of achieving the drop. But it's left behind a permanent distrust of technology, a vast inertia, a lack of desire to risk change because of the possible side effects. Great and possibly dangerous efforts have been abandoned because the danger was feared more than the greatness was desired."
"I take it you refer to the program on genetic engineering?"
"That's the most spectacular case, of course, but not the only one," said Montez bitterly.
"Frankly, I can't get excited over the abandonment of genetic engineering. It was a tissue of failures."
"We lost our chance at intuitionism."
"There has never been any evidence that intuitionism is desirable, and considerable indications of its undesirability. Besides, what about the lunar colony itself? This certainly is no indication of stagnation on Earth."
"It is," said Montez vigorously. "The lunar colony is a hangover, a last remnant of the period before the crisis, something that was carried through as a last sad forward thrust of mankind before the Great Retreat."
"That's too dramatic, Montez."
"I don't think so. The Earth has retreated. Mankind has retreated everywhere but on the moon. The lunar colony is man's frontier, not just physically, but psychologically, too.
Here is a world that doesn't have a web of life to disrupt, that doesn't have a complex environment and delicate balance to upset. Everything on the moon that is of any use to man is man-made. The moon is a world constructed by man from the start and out of basics. There is no past. Well, on Earth, we are unmanned by our longing for a pastoral past that never really existed, and that, if it had existed, could never exist again. In some respects, much of the ecology was disrupted in the crisis. We are making do with the remnants, so that we are frightened, always frightened. On the moon, there is no past to long for or dream about. There is no direction but forward. Montez seemed to be catching fire with his own words. He said, "Gottstein, I have watched it for 2 years. You will watch it for at least that much longer. There is a fire here on the moon, a restless burning. They expand in every direction. They expand physically. Every month, new corridors are bored, new living quarters established, a new population potential made room for. They expand as far as resources are concerned. They find new construction materials, new water sources, new loads of specialized minerals. They expand their sun power battery banks, enlarge their electronics factories. I suppose you know that these 10,000 people here on the moon are now the major source for Earth's supply of many electronic devices and fine biochemicals. I know they're an important source. Earth lies to itself for comfort's sake. The moon is the major source. At the present rate, it may become the sole source in the near future. It's growing intellectually, too. Gottstein, I imagine there isn't a bright science-oriented youngster on Earth who doesn't vaguely, or perhaps not so vaguely, dream of going to the moon one day. With Earth in retreat from technology, the moon is where the action is." "You're referring to the proton synchrotron, I suppose." "That's one example. When was the last new synchrotron built on Earth?" "But it's just the biggest and most dramatic item. Not the only or even the most important. If you want to know the most important scientific device on the moon..." "Something so secret I haven't been told?" "No. Something so obvious that no one seems to notice. It's the 10,000 brains here. The 10,000 best human brains there are. The only close-knit group of 10,000 human brains that are, in principle and by emotion, science-oriented." Gottstein moved restlessly and tried to shift his chair's position. It was bolted to the floor and wouldn't move, but in the attempt to do so, Gottstein found himself skittering out of the chair. Montez reached out an arm to steady him. Gottstein flushed. "Sorry." "You'll get used to the gravity." Gottstein said, "But aren't you making it out a lot worse than it is? Earth isn't a know-nothing planet altogether. We did develop the electron pump. That's a purely terrestrial accomplishment. No lunarite had anything to do with it." Montez shook his head and muttered a few words in his native Spanish. They didn't sound like placid words. He said, "Have you ever met Frederick Hallam?" Gottstein smiled. "Yes, as a matter of fact, I have. The father of the electron pump. I believe he has the phrase tattooed on his chest." "The mere fact that you smile and make that remark proves my point, really. Ask yourself, could a man like Hallam really have fathered the electron pump? For the unthinking multitude, the story will do, but the fact is, and you must know it if you stop to think about it, there is no father to the electron pump. The para people, the people in the para universe, whoever they are and whatever that is, invented it. Hallam was their accidental instrument. All of Earth is their accidental instrument." "We were clever enough to take advantage of their initiative." "Yes, as cows are clever enough to eat the hay we provide for them. The pump is no sign that man is forward-looking. Quite the reverse." "If the pump is a backward step, then I say good for backwardness. I wouldn't want to do without it." "Who would? But the point is, it fits Earth's present mood perfectly. Infinite energy at virtually zero cost, except for maintenance, and with zero pollution besides. But there are no electron pumps on the moon.
Gottstein said, I imagine there's no need for them. The solar batteries supply what the lunarites require, infinite energy at virtually zero cost, except for maintenance, and with zero pollution besides. Isn't that the litany?
Yes, indeed. But the solar batteries are entirely man-made.
That's the point I'm making. An electron pump was projected for the moon. Installation was attempted.
And
it didn't work. The para people didn't accept the tungsten. Nothing happened.
I didn't know that. Why not?
Montez lifted his shoulders and eyebrows expressively.
How is one to know?
We might assume, for example, that the para people live on a world without a satellite, that they have no conception of separate worlds in close proximity, each populated, that, having found one, they did not seek another. Who knows? The point is that the para people didn't fight, and we ourselves, without them, could do nothing.
We ourselves, repeated Gottstein thoughtfully. By that you mean the Earthmen?
Yes.
And the Lunarites? They were not involved.
Were they interested?
I don't know.
That's where my uncertainty and fear chiefly rests.
The Lunarites, the native Lunarites particularly, do not feel like Earthmen.
I don't know what their plans are or what they intend. I can't find out.
Gottstein looked thoughtful.
But what can they do?
Do you have any reason to suppose they intend to do us harm, or that they can do Earth harm even if they intend it?
I can't answer that question. They are an attractive and intelligent people. It seems to me they lack real hatred or real rage or even real fear.
But perhaps that is what it only seems to me.
What bothers me most is that I don't know.
The scientific equipment on the moon is run by Earth, I believe.
That is correct. The proton synchrotron is. The radio telescope on the trans-terrestrial side is. The 300-inch optical telescope is. The large equipment, that is, all of which has been in existence for 50 years.
And what's been done since?
Very little by Earthmen.
What about the Lunarites?
I'm not sure. Their scientists work in the large installations, but I once tried to check time cards.
There are gaps.
Gaps?
They spend considerable time away from the large installations. It is as though they had laboratories of their own.
Well, if they produce many electronic devices and fine biochemicals, isn't that to be expected?
Yes, but... Gottstein, I don't know. I fear my ignorance.
There was a moderately long pause.
Gottstein said, Montez, I take it you are telling me all this so that I will be careful, so that I will try to find out what the Lunarites are doing.
I suppose that's about it, said Montez unhappily. But you don't even know that they're doing anything at all.
I feel that they are.
Gottstein said, It's odd, then. I should be trying to talk you out of all this fearful mysticism of yours, but it's odd.
What is?
The same vessel that brought me to the moon brought someone else to the moon. I mean, a large party came, but one face in particular triggered something. I didn't talk to him, had no occasion to, and I dismissed the matter. But now our talk is pushing a button, and he suddenly comes back to mind.
Yes?
I was on a committee once that dealt with electron pump matters, a question of safety. He smiled briefly. Earth's lost nerve, you might say. We worry about safety everywhere, and a good thing, damn it, lost nerve or not. The details escape me, but in connection with that hearing, I saw that face that now I saw on the vessel. I'm convinced of it.
Does that have significance, do you think?
I'm not sure. I associate that face with something disturbing. If I keep on thinking, it may come back to me. In any case, I had better get a list of the passengers and see if any name means something to me.
Too bad, Montez, but I think you're getting me started.
Not bad at all, said Montez.
I'm glad of it. As for this man, it may be he is only a tourist of no consequence and will be gone in 2 weeks, but I am glad to have you thinking about the matter. Gottstein did not seem to be listening. He is a physicist or a scientist of some sort, he muttered. I'm certain of it, and I associate him with danger. 4. Hello, said Delany cheerfully. The Earthman turned around. Recognition took almost no time at all. Selany. Am I right, Selany? Right. Correctly pronounced. Are you enjoying yourself? The Earthman said gravely, Very much. It makes me realize how unique our century is. It was not so long ago I was on Earth, feeling tired of my world, tired of myself. Then I thought, Well, if I were living 100 years ago, the only way I could leave the world would be to die. But now, I can go to the moon. He smiled without real gaiety. Selany said, Are you happier now that you are on the moon? A little. He looked about. Don't you have a crowd of tourists to take care of? Not today, she said cheerfully. It's my day off. Who knows? I may take 2 or 3. It's a dull job. What a shame, then, that you bumped into a tourist on your day off. I didn't bump into you. I came looking for you. And a hard job that was, too. You shouldn't wander off by yourself. The Earthman looked at her with interest. Why should you look for me? Are you fond of Earthmen? No, she said with easy frankness. I'm sick of them. I dislike them on principle, and being constantly associated with them in my job makes it worse. Yet you come looking for me, and there isn't a way on Earth, on the moon I mean, that I can convince myself I am young and handsome. Even if you were, it wouldn't help. Earthmen don't interest me, as everyone but Baron knows. Then why do you come looking for me? Because there are other ways of being interested, and because Baron is interested. And who is Baron? Your boyfriend? Delany laughed. Baron Neville. He's a lot more than a boy and a lot more than a friend. We have sex when we feel like it. Well, that's what I meant. Do you have children? One boy. He's 10. He spends most of his time in the boys' compound. To spare you the next question, he's not Baron's. I may have a child by Baron if we're still together when I'm assigned another child, if I'm assigned another child. I'm pretty sure I will be. You're quite frank. About things I don't consider secret, of course. Now, what would you like to do? They had been walking along a corridor of milk-white rock, into the glazed surface of which were inset dusky bits of moon gems that lay about for the taking in most sections of the lunar surface. She wore sandals which hardly seemed to touch the ground. He wore thick-soled boots which leadenly helped weigh him down to keep his steps from becoming torture. The corridor was one way. Occasionally a small electric cart would overtake them and move nearly silently past. The Earthman said, Now what would I like to do? That is a broad-beamed invitation. Would you like to set boundary conditions so that my answers will not innocently offend you? Are you a physicist? The Earthman hesitated. Why do you ask? Just to hear what you would say. I know you're a physicist. How? No one says set boundary conditions unless they are. Especially if the first thing they want to see on the moon is the proton synchrotron. Is that why you've come looking for me? Because I seem to be a physicist? That's why Baron sent me looking for you, because he's a physicist. I came because I thought you were rather unusual for an Earthman. In what way? Nothing terribly complimentary if it's compliments you're fishing for. It's just that you seem not to like Earthmen. How can you tell that? I watched you look at the others in the party. Besides, I can always tell somehow. It's the Earthies who don't like Earthies who tend to stay on the moon. Which brings me back to the question, what would you like to do? And I'll set the boundary conditions. I mean, as far as sightseeing is concerned. The Earthman looked at her sharply.
That's peculiar, Selene. You have a day off. Your job is sufficiently uninteresting or distasteful so that you are glad to have that day off and would be willing to make it two or three. Yet your way of spending it is to volunteer to resume your job for me particularly, just because of a little interest.
Baron's interest. He's busy now, and there's no harm in entertaining you until he's ready.
Besides, it's different. Can't you see it's different? On my job, I'm riding herd on a couple of dozen Earthies. Don't you mind my using the term?
I use it myself.
Because you're an Earthman. Some Earth people consider it a term of derision and resent it when a Lunarite uses it.
You mean when a Loony uses it?
Selene flushed. She said, yes, that's about it.
Well then, let's neither of us cry out at words. Go ahead. You were telling me about your job.
Oh, on my job, there are these Earthies whom I have to keep from killing themselves, and whom I have to take here and there and give little speeches to, and make sure they eat and drink and walk by the book. They see their little pet sights and do their little pet things, and I have to be terribly polite and motherly.
Awful, said the Earthman.
But you and I can do as we please, I hope, and you are willing to take your chances, and I don't have to watch what I say.
I told you that you're perfectly welcome to call me Earthy.
All right, then. I'll have a busman's holiday. What would you like to do?
That's an easy one to answer. I want to see the Proton Synchrotron.
Not that. Maybe Baron can arrange it after you see him.
Well, if I can't see the Synchrotron, I don't know what else there is to see. I know the radio telescope is on the other side, and I don't suppose there's any novelty in it anyway.
You tell me, what doesn't the average tourist get to see?
A number of things.
There are the algae rooms, not the antiseptic processing plants which you've seen, but the farms themselves. However, the smell is pretty strong there, and I don't suppose an earthy Earthman would find it particularly appetizing. Earthmen have trouble with the food as it is.
Does that surprise you?
Have you ever tasted Earth food?
Not really. I probably wouldn't like it, though. It all depends on what you're used to.
I suppose so, said the Earthman, sighing. If you ate a real steak, you'd probably gag at the fat and fiber.
We could go to the outskirts where the new corridors are being driven into bedrock, but you'll have to wear special protective garments.
There are the factories.
You make the choice, Selene.
I will, if you will tell me something honestly.
I can't promise without hearing the question.
I said that Earthies that didn't like Earthies tended to stay on the moon. You didn't correct me. Do you intend to stay on the moon?
The Earthman stared at the toes of his clumsy boots. He said,
Selene, I had trouble getting a visa to the moon. They said I might be too old for the trip, and that if I stayed any length of time, I might find it impossible to return to Earth. So I told them I planned to stay on the moon permanently.
You weren't lying?
I wasn't sure at the time, but I think I'll stay here now.
I should have thought they would have been less willing than ever to let you go under those conditions.
Why?
Generally, the Earth authorities don't like to send physicists to the moon on a permanent basis.
The Earthman's lips twitched. In that respect, I had no trouble.
Well then, if you're going to be one of us, I think you ought to visit the gymnasium. Earthies often want to, but we don't encourage them as a general rule, though it's not forbidden outright. Immigrants are a different thing.
Why?
Well, for one thing, we exercise in the nude or near nude.
Why not?
She sounded aggrieved, as though weary of repeating a defensive position.
The temperature is controlled, the environment is clean. It's just that where people from Earth are expected to be, nudity becomes unsettling. Some Earthies are shocked, some are titillated, and some are both.
Well, we're not going to dress in the gymnasium for their sake, and we're not going to cope with them either, so we keep them out.
But immigrants?
They'll have to get used to it. In the end, they'll be discarding clothes, too. and they'll need the gymnasium even more than the native Lunarites do.
I'll be honest with you, Selenie. If I encounter female nudity, I'll find it titillating, too. I'm not quite so old that I won't.
Well, titillate, then, she said indifferently. But to yourself. Agreed?
Do we have to get undressed, too? He looked at her with amused interest.
As spectators? No. We could, but we don't have to. You would feel uncomfortable if you did this early in the game, and you wouldn't be a particularly inspiring sight to the rest of us.
You are frank.
Do you think it would be? Be honest. And as for myself, I have no wish to put you under a special strain in your private titillation, so we might both just as well stay clothed.
Will there be any objection? I mean, to my being there as an earthy of uninspirational appearance?
Not if I'm with you.
Very well, then, Selenie. Is it far away?
We are there, just through here.
Ah, then you were planning to come here all the time.
I thought it might be interesting.
Why?
Selenie smiled suddenly. I just thought.
The Earthman shook his head.
I'm beginning to think you never just think. Let me guess. If I'm to stay on the moon, I will need to exercise now and then in order to keep muscles, bones, and all my organs, perhaps, in condition.
Quite true. So do all of us. But immigrants from Earth in particular. The day will come when the gymnasium will be a daily grind for you.
They stepped through a door, and the Earthman stared in astonishment.
This is the first place I've seen that looks like Earth.
In what way?
Why, it's big. I didn't imagine you would have such big rooms on the moon. Desks, office machinery, women at the desks.
Bare-breasted women, said Selenie gravely.
That part isn't Earth-like, I admit.
We've got a hold chute, too, and an elevator for Earthies. There are many levels. But wait. She approached a woman at one of the mirror desks, talking in a rapid, low voice, while the Earthman stared at everything with amiable curiosity.
Selenie returned. No trouble. And it turns out we're going to have a melee. A rather good one. I know the teams.
This place is very impressive, really.
If you still mean its size, it's not nearly big enough. We have three gymnasiums. This is the largest.
I'm somehow pleased that in the Spartan surroundings of the moon, you can afford to waste so much room on frivolity.
Frivolity?
Selenie sounded offended.
Why do you think this is frivolity?
Melees? Some sort of game?
You might call it a game. On Earth, you can do such things for sports. 10 men doing, 10,000 watching.
It's not so on the moon.
What's frivolous for you is necessary for us.
This way. We'll take the elevator, which means a little waiting, perhaps.
Didn't mean to get you angry.
I'm not really angry, but you must be reasonable. You Earthmen have been adapted to Earth gravity for all the 300 million years since life crawled onto dry land. Even if you don't exercise, you get by. We've had no time at all to adapt to moon gravity.
You look different enough.
If you're born and reared under moon gravity, your bones and muscles are naturally slimmer and less massive than an Earthie's would be, but that's superficial. There isn't a bodily function we possess, however subtle, digestion, rates of hormonal secretions, that isn't maladjusted to gravity and that doesn't require a deliberate regimen of exercise. If we can arrange exercise in the form of fun and games, that does not make it frivolity.
Here's the elevator.
The Earthman hung back in momentary alarm, but Selenie said with residual impatience, as though still seething over the necessity of defense,
I suppose you're going to tell me it looks like a wickerwork basket. Every Earthman who uses it says so. With moon gravity, it doesn't have to be any more substantial.
The elevator moved downward slowly. They were the only ones on board.
The Earthman said, I suspect this isn't much used.
Selenie smiled again. You're right. The whole shoot is much more popular and much more fun.
What is it?
Exactly what the name implies. Here we are. We only had to drop 2 levels. It's just a vertical tube you can drop through with handholds. We don't encourage Earthies to use it.
Too risky?
Not in itself. You can climb down as though it were a ladder. However, there are always youngsters swinging down at considerable speed, and Earthies don't know how to keep out of the way. Collisions are always discomforting. But you'll get to use it in time. In fact, what you'll see now is a kind of large hold chute designed for recklessness. She led him to a circular railing around which a number of individuals were leaning and talking. All were more or less in the nude. Sandals were common, and usually a hip purse was slung over one shoulder. Some wore briefs. One was scooping a greenish mash out of a container and was eating it. The Earthman wrinkled his nose slightly as he passed that one. He said, "The dental problem must be severe on the moon."
"It isn't good," Selene agreed. "If we ever get the chance, we'll select for an edentate jaw."
"Toothlessness?"
"Maybe not entirely. We might keep the incisors and canines for cosmetic reasons and for occasionally useful tasks. They're easily cleaned, too. But why should we want useless molars? It's just a hangover from an earthy past."
"Are you making any progress in that direction?"
"No," she said stiffly. "Genetic engineering is illegal. Earth insists."
She was leaning over the railing.
"They call this the moon's playground," she said.
The Earthman looked down. It was a large cylindrical opening with pink smooth walls to which metal bars were attached in what seemed a random configuration. Here and there, a bar stretched across a portion of the cylinder, sometimes across its entire width. It was perhaps 400 or 500 feet deep and about 50 feet across. No one seemed to be paying particular attention either to the playground or to the Earthman. Some had looked at him indifferently as he passed, seeming to weigh his clothed state, his facial appearance, and then had turned away. Some made a casual hand gesture to Selene's direction before turning away, but all turned away. The no-interest signal, however subdued, could not have been more blatant. The Earthman turned to the cylindrical opening. There were slim figures at the bottom, foreshortened because they were seen from above. Some wore wisps of clothing in red, some in blue. 2 teams, he decided. Clearly the wisps served protective functions, since all wore gloves and sandals, protective bands about knees and elbows. Some wore brief bands about the hips, some about the chests. "Oh," he muttered, "men and women."
Selene said, "Right. The sexes compete equally, but the idea is to prevent the uncontrolled swinging of parts that might hamper the guided fall."
"There's a sexual difference there, which also involves vulnerability to pain. It's not modesty."
The Earthman said, "I think I've read of this."
"You may have," said Selene indifferently. "Not much seems to get out. Not that we have any objection, but the terrestrial government prefers to keep news of the moon to a minimum."
"Why, Selene?"
"You're an Earthman. You tell me. Our theory here on the moon is that we embarrass the Earth, or at least the Earth government."
On either side of the cylinder now, 2 individuals were rising rapidly, and the patter of light drumbeats was heard in the background. At first, the climbers seemed to be going up a ladder, rung by rung, but their speed increased, and by the time they were halfway up, they were striking each hold as they passed, making an ostentatious slapping noise.
"Couldn't do that on Earth as gracefully," said the Earthman admiringly. "Or at all," he amended.
"It's not just low gravity," said Selene. "Try it if you think so. This takes endless hours of practice."
The climbers reached the railing and swung up to a headstand. They performed a simultaneous somersault and began to fall.
"They can move quickly when they want to," said the Earthman.
Said Selene through the patter of applause. "I suspect that when Earthmen, I mean the real Earthmen, the ones who have never visited the moon, think of moving around the moon, they think of the surface and of space suits. That's often slow, of course. The mass with the spacesuit added is huge, which means high inertia and a small gravity to overcome it.
Quite right, said the Earthman. I've seen the classic motion pictures of the early astronauts that all school children see, and the movements are like those underwater. The picture gets imprinted even when we know better.
You'd be surprised how fast we can move on the surface these days, spacesuit and all, said Thelony. And here, underground, without spacesuits, we can move as quickly as on Earth. The slower whip of gravity is made up for by the proper use of muscles.
But you can move slowly, too.
The Earthman was watching the acrobats. They had gone up with speed and were going down with deliberate slowness. They were floating, slapping the handholds to delay the drop rather than, as before, to accelerate the rise. They reached the ground, and two others replaced them, and then two more, and then two more. From each team, alternately, pairs competed in virtuosity. Each pair went up in unison. Each pair rose and fell in a more complicated pattern. One pair kicked off simultaneously to cross the tube in a low parabola, convex upward, each reaching the handhold the other had abandoned, and somehow skimming past each other in midair without touching. That evoked louder applause. The Earthman said, I suspect I lack the experience to appreciate the finer points of skill. Are these all native Lunarites?
They have to be, said Thelony. The gymnasium is open to all lunar citizens, and some immigrants are fairly good, considering. For this kind of virtuosity, however, you must depend on babies that are conceived and born here. They have the proper physical adaptation, at least more than native Earthmen have, and they get the proper childhood training. Most of these performers are under 18.
I imagine it's dangerous, even at moon gravity levels.
Broken bones aren't very uncommon. I don't think there's been an actual death, but there's been at least one case of broken spine and paralysis. That was a terrible accident. I was actually watching. Oh, wait now. We're going to have the ad-libs now.
The what?
Till now, we've had set pieces. The climbs were according to a fixed pattern. The percussion beats seemed softer as one climber rose and suddenly launched into midair. He caught a transverse bar one-handed, circled it once vertically, and let go. The Earthman watched closely. He said, Amazing! He gets around those bars exactly like a gibbon.
A what? Asked Thelony.
A gibbon, a kind of ape. In fact, the only ape still existing in the wild. He looked at Thelony's expression and said, I don't mean it as an insult, Thelony. They are graceful creatures.
Thelony said, frowning, I've seen pictures of apes.
You probably haven't seen gibbons in motion.
I dare say that Earthies might call Lunarites gibbons and mean it insultingly, about on the level of what you mean by Earthy. But I don't mean it so.
He leaned both elbows on the railing and watched the movement. It was like dancing in the air. He said,
How do you treat Earth immigrants here on the moon, Thelony? I mean, immigrants who mean to stay here lifelong. Since they lack true Lunarite abilities.
That makes no difference. Immies are citizens. There's no discrimination. No legal discrimination.
What does that mean? No legal discrimination.
Well, you said it yourself. There are some things they can't do. There are differences. Their medical problems are different, and they usually had a worse medical history. If they come in middle age, they look old.
The Earthman looked away embarrassed. Can they intermarry? I mean, immigrants and Lunarites?
Certainly. That is, they can interbreed.
Yes, that's what I meant.
Of course. No reason why an immigrant can't have some worthwhile genes.
Heavens, my father was an Immie, though I'm second-generation Lunarite on my mother's side.
I suppose your father must have come when he was quite... Oh, good Lord!
He froze at the railing, then drew a shuddering sigh.
I thought he was going to miss that bar.
Not a chance, said Selene. That's Marco Four. He likes to do that, reach out at the last moment. Actually, it's bad form to do that, and the real champion doesn't. Still, my father was 22 when he arrived.
I suppose that's the way. Still young enough to be adaptable, no emotional complications back on Earth. From the standpoint of the earthy male, I imagine it must be rather nice to have a sexual attachment with a...
Sexual attachment?
Selene's amusement seemed to cover a very real sense of shock.
You don't suppose my father had sex with my mother? If my mother heard you say that, she'd set you right in a hurry.
But... artificial insemination was what it was, for goodness sake.
Sex with an Earthman?
The Earthman looked solemn.
I thought you said there was no discrimination.
That's not discrimination. That's a matter of physical fact. An Earthman can't handle the gravity field properly. However practiced he might be, under the stress of passion, he might revert. I wouldn't risk it. The clumsy fool might snap his arm or leg, or worse, mine. Gene mixtures are one thing. Sex is quite another.
I'm sorry.
Isn't artificial insemination against the law?
She was watching the gymnastics with absorption.
That's Marco Four again. When he isn't trying to be uselessly spectacular, he really is good. And his sister is almost as good. When they work together, it's really a poem of motion. Look at them now. They'll come together and circle the same bar as though they have a single body stretched across. He's a little too flamboyant at times, but you can't fault his muscular control.
Yes, artificial insemination is against Earth's law, but it's allowed where medical reasons are involved, and, of course, that's often the case, or said to be.
All the acrobats had now climbed to the top, and were in a great circle just below the railing. All the reds on one side, the blues on the other. All arms on the side of the interior were raised, and the applause was loud. Quite a crowd had now gathered at the rail.
You ought to have some seating arrangement, said the Earthman.
Not at all. This isn't a show. This is exercise. We don't encourage any more spectators than can stand comfortably about the railing. We're supposed to be down there, not up here.
You mean you can do that sort of thing, Selene?
After a fashion, of course. Any Lunarite can. I'm not as good as they are. I haven't joined any teams. There's going to be the melee now, the free-for-all. This is the really dangerous part. All 10 are going to be in the air, and each side is going to try to send members of the other side into a fall.
A real fall?
As real as possible.
Are there injuries occasionally?
Occasionally. In theory, this sort of thing is frowned upon. That is considered frivolous, and we don't have so large a population that we can afford to incapacitate anyone without real cause. Still, the melee is popular, and we can't raise the votes to outlaw it.
Which side do you vote on, Selene?
Selene blushed. Oh, never mind. You watch this.
The percussion ribbon had suddenly grown thunderous, and each of the individuals in the huge well darted outward like an arrow. There was wild confusion in mid-air, but when they parted again, each ended firmly on a bar grip. There was the tension of waiting. One launched, another followed, and the air was filled with flashing bodies again. Over and over it happened.
Selene said, "The scoring is intricate. There is a point for every launch, a point for every touch. 2 points for every miss inflicted, 10 points for a grounding, various penalties for various kinds of fouling."
Who keeps the score?
There are umpires watching who make the preliminary decisions, and there are television tapes in case of appeals. Very often, even the tapes can't decide. There was a sudden excited cry when a girl in blue moved past a boy in red and slapped his flank resoundingly. The boy who received the blow had writhed away, but not successfully, and grabbing at a wall bar with improper balance, struck that wall ungracefully with his knee.
"Where were his eyes?" demanded Selene indignantly. "He didn't see her coming."
The action grew hotter, and the Earthman tired of trying to make sense of the knotted flights. Occasionally, a leaper touched a bar and did not retain his hold. These were the times when every spectator leaned over the railing as though ready to launch himself into space in sympathy. At one time, Marco Four was struck in the wrist, and someone cried, "Foul!" Four missed his handhold and fell. To the Earthman's eyes, the fall under moon gravity was slow, and Four's lithe body twisted and turned, reaching for bar after bar, without quite making it. The others waited, as though all maneuvering was suspended during a fall. Four was moving quite rapidly now, though twice he had slowed himself without quite being able to maintain a handhold. He was very nearly to the ground when a sudden spidery lunge caught a transverse bar with the right leg, and he hung suspended and swinging, head downward, about 10 feet above the ground. Arms outspread, he paused while the applause rang out, and then he had twisted upright and jumped into a rapid climb. The Earthman said, "Was he fouled?" If Gene Wong actually grabbed Marco's wrist instead of pushing it, it was a foul. The umpire has ruled a fair block, however, and I don't think Marco will appeal. He fell a lot farther than he had to. He likes these last-minute saves, and someday he'll miscalculate and hurt himself. Uh-oh. The Earthman looked up in sudden inquiry, but Selene's eyes weren't upon him. She said, "That's someone from the commissioner's office, and he must be looking for you." "Why, I don't see why he should come here to find anyone else. You're the unusual one." "But there's no reason," began the Earthman. Yet the messenger, who had the build of an Earthman himself or an Earth immigrant, and who seemed uneasy to be the center of the stares of a couple of dozen slight nude figures who seemed to tinge their scorn with indifference, came directly toward him. "Sir," he began, "Commissioner Gottstein requests that you accompany me." 5. Baron Neville's quarters were somehow harsher than Selene's. His books were on bold display, his computer outlet was unmasked in one corner, and his large desk was in disarray. His windows were blank. Selene entered, folded her arms, and said, "If you live like a slob, Baron, how do you expect to have your thoughts neat?" "I'll manage," said Baron grumpily. "How is it you haven't brought the Earthman with you?" The commissioner got to him first, the new commissioner. "Gottstein?" "That's right. Why weren't you ready sooner?" "Because it took time to find out. I won't work blind." Selene said, "Well then, we'll just have to wait." Neville bit at a thumbnail and then inspected the results severely. "I don't know whether I ought to like the situation or not. What did you think of him?" "I liked him," said Selene definitely. "He was rather pleasant, considering he was an Earthy. He let me guide him. He was interested. He made no judgments. He didn't patronize. And I didn't go out of my way to avoid insulting him, either." "Did he ask any further about the synchrotron?" "No, but then he didn't have to." "Why not?" "I told him you wanted to see him, and I said you were a physicist. So I imagine he'll ask you whatever he wants to ask you when he sees you." "Didn't he think it strange that he should be talking to a female tourist guide who just happens to know a physicist?" "Why strange? I said you were my sex partner. There's no accounting for sex attraction, and a physicist may well condescend to a lowly tourist guide." "Shut up, Selene." "Oh, look, Baron, it seems to me that if he were spinning some sort of fancy web, if he approached me because he planned to get to you through me, he would have shown some trace of anxiety. The more complicated and silly any plot, the more rickety it is, and the more anxious the plotter. I deliberately acted casual. I talked about everything but the synchrotron. I took him to a gymnastics show." "And?" "And he was interested, relaxed and interested. Whatever he has on his mind, it isn't involuted." "You're sure of that? Yet the commissioner got to him before I did. You consider that good?" "Why should I consider it bad? An open invitation to a meeting of some sort delivered in front of a couple of dozen Lunarites isn't particularly involuted either.
Neville leaned back with his hands clasped at the nape of his neck.
Selene, please don't insist on making judgments when I don't ask you to. It's irritating. The man is not a physicist in the first place. Did he tell you he was?
Selene paused to think. I called him a physicist. He didn't deny it, but I don't recall that he actually said he was. And yet, I'm sure he is.
It's a lie of omission, Selene. He may be a physicist in his own mind, but the fact is that he isn't trained as a physicist and he doesn't work as one. He has had scientific training, I'll grant him that, but he has no scientific job of any kind. He couldn't get one. There isn't a lab on Earth that would give him working room. He happens to be on Fred Hallam's crud list, and he's been top man there for a long time.
Are you sure?
Believe me, I checked. Didn't you just criticize me for taking so long? And it sounds so good that it's too good.
Why too good? I don't see what you're getting at.
Doesn't it seem to you we ought to trust him? After all, he's got a grievance against Earth.
You can certainly argue that way if your facts are right.
Oh, my facts are right, at least in the sense that they're what turns up if you dig for them. But maybe we're supposed to argue that way.
Baron, that's disgusting. How can you weave these conspiracy theories into everything?
Ben didn't sound...
Ben, said Neville sardonically.
Ben, repeated Selene firmly.
Ben didn't sound like a man with a grievance, or like a man trying to make me think he sounded like a man with a grievance.
No, but he managed to make you think he was someone to be liked. You did say you liked him, didn't you? With emphasis. Maybe that's exactly what he was trying to do.
I'm not that easy to fool, and you know it.
Well, I'll just have to wait till I see him.
The hell with you, Baron. I've associated with thousands of Earthies of all kinds. It's my job. And you have no reason whatsoever to speak sarcastically about my judgment. You know you have every reason to trust it.
All right, we'll see. Don't get angry. It's just that we'll have to wait now.
And as long as we do, he rose lithely to his feet. Guess what I'm thinking?
I don't have to.
Selene rose as smoothly, and with an almost invisible motion of her feet slid sideways, well away from him.
But think it by yourself. I'm not in the mood. Are you annoyed because I've impugned your judgment?
I'm annoyed because... Oh, hell, why don't you keep your room in better condition?
And she left.
6. I would like, said Gottstein, to offer you some Earthside luxury, Doctor. But, as a matter of principle, I have been allowed to bring none. The good people of the moon resent the artificial barriers imposed by special treatment for men from Earth. It seems better to soothe their sensibilities by assuming the Lunarite pose as far as possible, though I am afraid my gait will give me away. Their confounded gravity is impossible.
The Earthman said, I find this so also. I congratulate you on your new post.
Not yet quite mine, sir.
Still, my congratulations.
Yet I can't help wondering why you've asked to see me.
We were shipmates. We arrived not so long ago on the same vessel.
The Earthman waited politely.
Gottstein said, And my acquaintance with you is a longer one than that. We met briefly some years ago.
The Earthman said quietly, I'm afraid I don't recall.
I'm not surprised at that. There is no reason for you to remember. I was, for a time, on the staff of Senator Burt, who headed, still heads, in fact, the Committee on Technology and the Environment. It was at a time when he was rather anxious to get the goods on Hallam, Frederick Hallam.
The Earthman seemed, quite suddenly, to sit a little straighter.
Did you know Hallam?
You're the second person to ask me that since my coming to the moon.
Yes, I did. Not intimately. I've known others who've met him. Oddly enough, their opinion usually coincided with mine. For a person who is apparently idolized by the planet, Hallam inspired little personal liking on the part of those who knew him.
Little? None at all, I think, said the Earthman.
Gottstein ignored the interruption. It was my job, at the time, or at least my assignment from the Senator, to investigate the electron pump and see if its establishment and growth were accompanied by undue waste and personal profit-taking. It was a legitimate concern for what was essentially a watchdog committee, but the Senator was, between us, hoping to find something of damage to Hallam. He was anxious to decrease the stranglehold that man was gaining on the scientific establishment. There he failed. That much would be obvious. Hallam is stronger than ever right now. There was no graft to speak of, certainly none that could be traced to Hallam. The man is rigidly honest. In that sense, I am sure, power has its own market value not necessarily measured in credit bills. But what interested me at the time, though it was something I could not then follow up, was that I did come across someone whose complaint was not against Hallam's power, but against the electron pump itself. I was present at the interview, but I did not conduct it. You were the complainant, were you not? The Earthman said cautiously, I remember the incident to which you refer, but I still don't remember you. I wondered then how anyone could possibly object to the electron pump on scientific grounds. You impressed me sufficiently so that when I saw you on the ship, something stirred, and then, eventually, it came back. I have not referred to the passenger list, but let me check my memory. Aren't you Dr. Benjamin Andrew Dennison? The Earthman sighed. Benjamin Allen Dennison. Yes. But why does this come up now? The truth is, Commissioner, I don't want to drag up matters of the past. I'm here on the moon and rather anxious to start again, from the start if necessary. Damn it, I considered changing my name. That wouldn't have helped. It was your face I recognized. I have no objection to your new life, Dr. Dennison. I would not in any way interfere. But I would like to pry a little for reasons that do not directly involve you. I don't remember quite your objection to the electron pump. Could you tell me? Dennison's head bent. The silence lengthened itself, and the commissioner appointee did not interrupt. He even stifled a small clearing of the throat. Dennison said, Truly, it was nothing. It was a guess I made, a fear about the alteration in the intensity of the strong nuclear field. Nothing. Nothing. Gottstein did clear his throat now. Please don't mind if I strive to understand this. I told you that you interested me at the time. I was unable to follow it up then, and I doubt that I could dig the information out of the records now. The whole thing is classified. The Senator did very poorly at the time, and he isn't interested in publicity over it. Still, some details come back. You were once a colleague of Hallam's. You were not a physicist. That's right. I was a radiochemist. So was he. Stop me if I remember incorrectly, but your early record was a very good one, right? There were objective criteria in my favor. I had no illusions about myself. I was a brilliant worker. Amazing how it comes back. Hallam, on the other hand, was not. Not particularly. And yet, afterward, things did not go well with you. In fact, when we interviewed you, I think you volunteered to see us. You were working for a toy manufacturer. Cosmetics, said Dennison in a strangled voice. Male cosmetics. That didn't help gain me a respectful hearing. No, it wouldn't. I'm sorry. You were a salesman. Sales manager. I was still brilliant. I rose to vice president before breaking off and coming to the moon. Did Hallam have something to do with that? I mean, with you leading science? Commissioner, said Dennison, please, It really doesn't matter any longer. I was there when Hallam first discovered the tungsten conversion and when the chain of events began that led to the electron pump. Exactly what would have happened if I had not been there, I can't say. Hallam and I might both have been dead of radiation poisoning a month later, or of a nuclear explosion 6 weeks later, I don't know. But I was there, and, partly because of me, Hallam is what he is now. And because of my part in it, I am what I am now. The hell with the details. Does that satisfy you? Because it will have to. I think it satisfies me. You had a personal grudge against Hallam then. I certainly had no affection for him in those days. I have no affection for him now, for that matter. Would you say, then, that your objection to the electron pump was inspired by your anxiety to destroy Hallam? Dennison said, I object to this cross-examination. Please, nothing of what I ask is intended to be used against you. This is for my own benefit, because I am concerned about the pump and about a number of things. Well, then, I suppose you might work out some emotional involvement. Because I disliked Hallam, I was ready to believe that his popularity and greatness had a false foundation. I thought about the electron pump, hoping to find a flaw. And you therefore found one? No, said Dennison forcefully, bringing his fist down on the arm of the chair and moving perceptibly upward from his seat in reaction. Not therefore. I found a flaw, but it was an honest one. Or so it seemed to me. I certainly didn't invent a flaw merely to puncture Hallam. No question of inventing, Doctor, said Gottstein soothingly. I don't dream of making such an implication. Yet we all know that in trying to determine something on the boundary lines of the known, it is necessary to make assumptions. The assumptions can be made over a gray area of uncertainty, and one can shade them in one direction or another with perfect honesty, but in accord with the emotions of the moment. You made your assumptions, perhaps, on the anti-Hallam edge of the possible. This is a profitless discussion, sir. At the time, I thought I had a valid point. However, I am not a physicist. I am, was, a radiochemist. Hallam was a radiochemist, too, but he is now the most famous physicist in the world. He's still a radiochemist, a quarter century out of date. Not so you. You worked hard to become a physicist. Dennison smoldered. You really investigated me. I told you. You impressed me. Amazing how it comes back. But now I'll pass on to something a little different. Do you know a physicist named Peter Lamont? Reluctantly, I've met him. Would you say he was brilliant, too? I don't know him well enough to say, and I hate to overuse the word. Would you say he knew what he was talking about? Barring information to the contrary, I would say yes. Carefully, the commissioner leaned back in his seat. It had a spindly look about it, and by Earth standards it would not have supported his weight. He said, Would you care to say how you came to know Lamont? Was it by reputation only? Did you meet? Dennison said, We had some direct conversations. He was planning to write a history of the electron pump, how it started, a full account of all the legendary crap that's grown up around it. I was flattered that Lamont came to me, that he seemed to have found out something about me. Damn it, Commissioner, I was flattered that he knew I was alive. But I couldn't really say much. What would have been the use? I would have gained nothing but some sneers, and I'm tired of it. Tired of brooding. Tired of self-pity. Do you know anything about what Lamont has been doing in the last few years? "What is it you're thinking of, Commissioner?" asked Denison cautiously.
"About a year ago, maybe a little more, Lamont spoke to Bert. I am not on the Senator's staff any longer, but we see each other occasionally. He talked to me about it. He was concerned. He thought Lamont might have made a valid point against the electron pump, and yet could see no practical way of taking up the matter. I, too, was concerned."
"Concern everywhere," said Denison sardonically.
"But now I wonder, if Lamont talked to you and..."
Stop right there, Commissioner. I think I see you sidling toward a point, and I don't want you to move any further. If you expect me to tell you that Lamont stole my idea, that once again I am being treated badly, you are wrong. Let me tell you as forcefully as I can. I had no valid theory. It was purely a guess. It worried me. I presented it. I was not believed. I was discouraged. Since I had no way of demonstrating its value, I gave up. I did not mention it in my discussion with Lamont. We never went past the early days of the pump. What he came up with later, however much it may have resembled my guess, was arrived at independently. It seems to be much more solid and to be based on rigid mathematical analysis. I lay claim to no priority, to none.
You seem to know about Lamont's theory. It made the rounds in recent months. The fellow can't publish, and no one takes him seriously, but it was passed along the grapevine. It even reached me.
End of side 5. To continue, turn the cassette over.